Top of the morning to you. Welcome to it. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. You know who I just got to see? Let's see Dale Johnson do the old option play.
See what?
Dale Johnson, revered newsman of KFOR Radio.
Okay.
He's able to sneak through here and get some headphones because God knows they're an endangered species around here. Welcome to it. As it is a Saturday, it is Husker baseball season, a 1-1 record. We'll dive into Nebraska baseball today a little bit. Husker basketball in action in Columbus. Spring football around the corner. Speaking of spring, it feels like that. Much of this last week and into the weekend, so you're smiling in this great state based on the weather you get in February. A handful of days. Cade Warner, part of the Rewind coming up. The son of Hall of Fame quarterback Kurt Warner is the son of the walk-on in Nebraska. He caught up with us on Hail Varsity Radio, so you'll hear from Cade Warner in about 20 minutes or so, a little less than.
Good
Brandon,
pickup. Good pickup.
No
like
kidding.
A lot. I think he's going to play early, too.
I think
not only because of Nebraska's roster, but just, I mean, you look at his size, his speed. Obviously, he knows the game, that sort of thing. Like, I don't think this is a guy that we're just going to see, you know, on the bench for, you know, until he maybe emerges as a senior or something like that. I think he's going to play.
He's not one of those prestige gets. You know what I mean? You're not just, hey, look, we got another famous kid.
Well, and look, and it's not just because he's white, but he reminds of Jordan Westerkamp a little bit. Westerkamp obviously had scholarship offers.
Just a few.
A very productive receiver. You know, all the records that, you know, Westerkamp had a bunch of records from the state of Illinois. Cade Warner's a record setter for the state of Arizona. I mean, he caught 240-some balls, which is a state record, over the course of his career. Started all 3 years in a big class in Arizona. So he's done it against good competition. It's interesting. It's puzzling why he didn't get any offers, especially when you consider that the exact same thing happened to his dad.
Right.
Well, and it turns out his dad had enough talent to make it into the Hall of Fame. So, you know,
make it into the Hall of Fame, make it to 3 Super Bowls, win 1.
Right.
So, yeah, Cade Warner, you'll hear from him. Brandon Vogel will join us in hour 2. The Iron Horse, Gary Sharp. Numbers to get in. 466-3776, 466-3776, toll-free 1-800-825-5865. Can find us on the ESPN 1480 app and take us with you if you're out exercising this morning or walking the dog or just getting away from the wife and kids. Kradak, Nebraska baseball not on TV yesterday. I think ESPN 3 today, and that's still not like kind of the old days back in, man, this is back late 80s, but when Oklahoma got just smoked for some NCAA issues, them and Oklahoma State, this is post-Switzer, post-Barry Sanders era. You wanted to watch Oklahoma State, you couldn't. You wanted to watch Oklahoma-Nebraska. It was almost like closed-circuit court TV pay-per-view to catch the old 89 game. Some of us did spring for that pay-per-view. You didn't quite do that last night, but you have your own pay-per-view horror story, it sounds like.
All right, so you know, okay, did you know Roy Jones still fights, by the way? Roy
Jones, he's got to feed his chickens, so yeah.
Okay.
His roosters, sorry.
So he fought last night. He's 48 now.
48 going on 28 when it comes to just shape.
You see him as a commentator on a lot of the HBO boxing events. A lot of those pay-per-view events, but he's still fighting. And I only learned that last night when I'm scrolling through the guide, and then all of a sudden it just shows, hey, recording right now is Roy Jones Jr. versus some bum. I can't even think of his name. I'm like, what? What is this? Like, click to it, and it's on pay-per-view. I'm like, what? Wife's like, what? Did you order that? I'm like, no, I did not order that. So it's a little investigative journalism. Find out that it's my 6-year-old daughter had managed to order that a couple weeks back and record it.
But she was anxious for it.
Because while we're running around, my 4-year-old, he wanted to watch punching. That's what he calls boxing. He just wanted to watch punching. So she was trying to help him out, and she's somehow, you know, because they're more digitally advanced than their parents are. Daughter somehow searches around, finds punching, boxing, and orders Roy. It was like $30.
Did you have a talk with Junior on that?
What?
Did you have a talk with Junior on that?
Yeah, it was, I mean, it's kind of proud in some ways, but also very disappointed. Like, and then I ended up watching some of it, and it was about as good as you might imagine.
You're paying for it.
I know, you might as well. No, and it's funny. So the fight gets stopped after 7 rounds because the guy that he punched in the nose, like his nose just bleeding profusely. And afterwards, the bum, I can't think of his name, the nicest dude ever. Here's when you know that it's 40-plus year olds in the boxing ring. They were so complimentary of one another in the post-fight. Like, there was no smack talk whatsoever. And the guy that he beat, he's like, hey, I'm retiring now after this, and this is a dream come true to get in the ring with Roy Jones. And I know this sounds crazy, but I was enjoying him beating me up. What are we watching? He was serious. Like, he was enjoying just the fact that he was in the ring with Roy Jones.
So you think guys ever said that about Tyson? Do you think guys ever said it was an honor, no, Iron Mike, for you to annihilate me in 40 seconds?
He was serious. He was like telling them thank you. They had their arms around each other. It was a big kumbaya moment. It was very surreal. Mm. Very surreal.
See what all Rocky IV did and inspired.
I know.
Yeah. Speaking of throwing punches and puncher's chance, Nebraska baseball, let's go there. Well, game one, not so much. 4-3, the Huskers lost. And you've heard this throughout Coach Erstad's tenure at Nebraska, minimizing damage. Do you watch baseball? How big a baseball fan are you? Obviously, you're a Nebraska fan. But if you have kids, you'll watch a ton of baseball. Despite talent level, it's T-ball to Little League to select ball or softball, whatever. I mean, that's what does teams in, is that one error in an inning. And then it is the Melvin Gordon moment of unearned runs and avalanches. How do you minimize damage? Nebraska could not do that. 4 unearned runs. They lose 4-3, top of the third. Following that error, 3 straight two-out hits to plate those 4 runs. So you get an error to the number 9 hole guy that extends an inning. You get the top of the lineup up, and they make you pay. Waldron, 6 hits, 7 innings. Solid outing, but you're that guy on the mound. You got to be a good teammate. But in the same sense, you maybe unravel after that one out error. And then when you get back on the mound, it's consecutive hits, 3 straight, 2 out. I mean, so game one didn't go so well. Nebraska battled back, got close. Game two, they came from behind and won 5-4. Game three of this Desert Classic had won today. And Mike Babcock did a great story and great preview on Nebraska baseball on HailVarsity.com. And the emphasis from Erstad, breathing and fundamentals. It sounds very simple, but it is so, so key. How are you breathing on the mound after there's an error? Do you minimize that damage? Do you execute the fundamentals? How many ground balls do guys take between the ages of 6 and 18, yeah, right? How many live situations do you take? A lot. There's even more simulated. So that'll be key moving forward. We're so early into this season. You've got a lot of offense. You got a lot of returning stars is what I'm going to say at the dish. Potential to be, other than Myers, of course. And then your staff looks pretty good. But that'll be kind of key for Nebraska moving forward. And Coach Erstad's done a great job of how he's scheduled, just trying to get guys tested early, assess, respond, and then learn and be better from it on the field. So, but it's so simple. The mental side of baseball is so important. Krenak, you're a much better baseball player than me, so you can speak to it a little bit more. But just that mental aspect, and then the focus and attention to detail of it at this level. Nebraska picked third. They had the talent to do that and then some in a good Big Ten this year.
Well, and it's not easy, too, to transition from, you know, taking balls in an indoor facility for a month or two, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden going outside and playing live ball. It's a different deal. So it makes sense why Nebraska struggles early from time to time. Here's what's funny, by the way. What are the chances of this? So Nebraska schedules these games. They're in Tempe, Arizona. That's where they're playing Riverside. Mm-hmm. The game could get rained out today in Arizona. In Tempe. No, I'm serious.
I know. My folks don't live far from there. I love
rain
them
is,
to death.
Rain is in the forecast.
They flee Nebraska because of the weather.
Rain is in the forecast for one of the most dry and arid regions on the planet. Like, that would be just their luck. That could very well happen today. The pitch is scheduled for 1 o'clock today, but might not happen. So that would be very interesting. Nebraska got some... They got some contributions from the bottom of the lineup yesterday,
yes.
which is good to see. And young guys, too.
Mojo Haggy, Brady Childs.
Mm-hmm. Both those. I mean, they combined for 5 hits
yes.
yesterday. You getting that kind of production. By the way, and good sign that you're seeing Haggy already cracking that lineup and producing. Not bad. He's obviously got the best name on the team. Kind of a little spark plug type guy in the outfield.
All name team.
So, you know, it'll be good. And that's one thing that's cool about baseball is there's a lot of turnover from year to year on the roster. I mean, it's opening up a box of presents every season. Like, oh, what's this guy got? Oh, what's this guy? Mojo Haggy, okay. Just making the transition from high school, no big deal. So it's good. It appears Nebraska has a little bit more speed.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you got the three guys that are position players and also pitchers. They got some versatility. I mean, it stacks up as one of Erstad's better chances.
He
I think that he's had since he's been here.
And when he talked to the media, he did. He's just no BS. I really love his attitude, and he was very proud at when the question about, you know, progression of the program. He mentioned that from a graduation standpoint, they're near 90%. When he got in, it was around 40%. And you think about that in baseball, where a lot of times you'll send kids to a JUCO, especially if they're Nebraska kids, the kids that are really talented, but you're not sure about transitioning. Not always, but in some instances. I mean, how many guys do you know that ended up going to JUCO down in Kansas to play ball to just see how they could handle that level of competition? And then if you can do it, Van Horn would find you, or you'd find your way to Nebraska. And it happens in, you know, the state of Texas. I mean, it happens in a lot of places. So there are instances on the roster where you get the JUCO transfer in. But, I mean, if you're not playing, you're leaving, too, in baseball. So from a graduation standpoint, that's one of the more dicey teams to look at with just that turnover you mentioned. So off the field, he's happy with how things are going. On the field, he bluntly said, we've not won enough games. And I yep. love that type of...
I appreciate the approach.
Yeah, right?
I appreciate that sentiment. He's not setting himself up for anything weird when he says that. Because that's what we're all thinking. You know? That's what we're all thinking. And so, yeah, I appreciate how blunt he is about that.
No, and that's just how he is. We'll dive into some Nebraska football. Billy Devaney caught up with the World Herald and Journal Star. And the topic of talent came up.
Well, he's not afraid to let it rip, is he?
He isn't, but he shouldn't be with his pedigree and background from the NFL. I mean, he has seen drafts. He's seen rosters. He's seen moves. He's seen free agent acquisitions. He's looked at trades. Yeah, that's his wheelhouse. So his assessment of talent and where Nebraska stands with it. I want to go back to this again, breathing and fundamentals. My oh my, how it translates to every sport, doesn't it? Because you think of where Nebraska football wants to go, and the game that it all unraveled, and the game that Devaney was asked about and highlighted was that Ohio State game where they just had different dudes on the field. Well, part of that recipe for disaster was, well, stage.
Oh, geez, yeah.
So
I'm still convinced on that deal.
Uh-huh.
I'm still convinced, not to get too psychobabble.
Do it.
But, you know, your team takes its cue from its leaders. And I think there are enough guys that have been through the Melvin Gordon situations enough that the big stage kind of freaks them out a little bit. And I don't think they're the same dudes when they come out onto that same field.
They have not had success.
And I think that trickles down to the rest of the team. I just remember, it's probably cheesy, but I just remember when they came out of the tunnel, and they're showing it on TV, and Nate Gary is doing like his jump up and down, let's get pumped thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he was doing it. It didn't look right, dude. Like it wasn't
like forced.
Yes, it was not. I mean, it was worrisome.
I gotta act like I gotta act the same and confident, even though I'm like, oh dear God,
dude. It wasn't right. It wasn't right. It was like a half-ass jump, and he looked tight, and the team, and that's what happened. The team just looks tight, and so you just wonder if in that locker room. In that environment, which is total buzzsaw of an environment, take Memorial Stadium against any top 10 team. That's pretty much what Ohio State's like every week, right?
Sure.
Like,
yeah, 100,000 plus.
It's a crazy, crazy environment. And they're good. Right? And you just wonder, because we know Nebraska's not that bad, right? Like, just talent-wise. In fact, there are very few football teams in college football that are that bad to get blown out by 59. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're just generally not, nobody's. Yes, Ohio State has more talent, but not 59 points more talent. Okay, there's some mental stuff going on there, obviously. And you just wonder, man. The rest of the team wasn't jumping. He kind of was. You just wonder if in the locker room, those guys who are kind of looked up to as the leaders, if they're looking like they've seen a ghost. And they're not quite as loose and as whatever as they usually are, how that trickles down.
Let me ask you this, though.
You'd see the same thing out of Bo. Do you remember Bo coming out of the locker room for big games where the guy just looks like he's like pale?
The wood chipper dude from Fargo?
Dude. I mean, it showed on his face like he was not like confident and loose. He was worried as bleep.
you're right. And you know what game kind of goes through my mind, like from a stress level being 15 out of 10, was the Miami game back here in Lincoln. Game you're favored, game against a traditional kind of a rival, a game that the fans wanted blood. And the stress and tension of that week, knowing you got to get this one done or it's a storm, not a good storm, if you don't, yeah, you're afraid to fail is what it is. You're afraid to fail, so you can't play loose and confident versus walking in like you own it. And how do you do it? You go get one of those wins. You go get that big game. You go get a prize pelt. Now, it's got to be done on the field. It's got to be executed by the players. It's got to be communicated and crafted by the coaches. How much, and I mean, what can you do as a coach to get over that hump is my question. And I mean, it goes in cycles. It's cyclical, depending again, back to the talent topic, depending on your talent. You just have better dudes and you have the right leaders and you have that right locker room and it all it's a perfect formula when it works. You go in there and get it done. You finally slay that dragon. Other instances,
look, dude, don't fool yourself. It comes from the players.
Mm-hmm.
I think the coach obviously helps, but it comes from the players. And I think you look no further than Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
They've pretty much consistently played kind of the same way pretty much every year. They've lost in a couple blowouts. I get it. But few and far between when that happens to them. And it's always to a superior team. And you could see how it happened, you know, like the Ohio State championship year. Yeah, Wisconsin got murdered.
They did. But you know what? Guess what happened? The next year, they didn't let that game phase them.
Right.
Four games later.
And you look at what they have turned over coaches like nothing. It's a new head coach. It's new assistants. Like every 2 or 3 years, faces are always changing. But they're not. They have a player culture. That makes it to where, look, I'm not minimizing the importance of having a good coach, but I don't think it's as big of a deal at Wisconsin as it is in most places, because the players set the bar and the players pass on the traditions and the expectations to other classes. Coaches come and go, but there's a certain standard.
Culture and system.
Absolutely. That is a healthy, healthy player culture. That has standards. Doesn't matter who the coach is. Bielema, cool, whatever. You're out, okay, whatever. Gary Anderson, okay, cool. Who are you? Get out here. Dave Aranda, you're out, cool. No problem. We're still going to play great. You know what I mean? It just doesn't matter.
Yeah, the Constance, your architect, and that's Barry. So
right. He's kind of instilled that culture, and that is strong. So going into this year for Nebraska, the way that translates is, okay, Nebraska's player-led culture hasn't been the best. I mean, there's no other way to put it, right? It just hasn't. Obviously, when blowouts like that are happening, something's wrong upstairs.
Yep.
With how the team's being led internally.
And that's where the coaching comes in to help get you on that couch so you talk out your problems and you go win together.
Something, right? Yeah. Something.
Mark Crane at Chris Schmidt. Great to have you in on a Saturday morning. Hail Varsity Radio, a little Husker baseball to start. We'll get further into the talent discussion and Billy Devaney's comments. You can join us 466-377-6800-825-5865. Brandon Vogel, the Iron Horse, Gary Sharp, less than a half hour away. Our rewind in a moment with Cade Warner, former Arizonan that is now walking on at Nebraska to play wide receiver. I want to remind you, if you're out for a good time with family, with friends, and you have a few drinks, and someone offers you a ride home, but you say, nope, I'm good, because you think you're okay to drive, mixing alcohol and driving, never a good thing for anyone. You can take a life, you can lose yours, you can be arrested, you can go to jail, you can lose your license, pay fines, legal fees, any way you look at it, you drink, you drive, you lose. This message from the Nebraska Department of Roads and Highway Safety Office. A quick time out as Hail Varsity Weekend rolls on. Cade Warner, our conversation up next. Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Early to rise with Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Here's Chris Schmidt and Mark Cranick.
Back to it. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Walk on to Nebraska and welcome in Cade Warner with us. Cade, congrats on your decision. How are you today?
Good. Thank you very much. How are you doing?
Doing well. Take me through this process. I know you've talked about it a little bit. How tough was it to decide to head Nebraska's direction versus stay at home?
It was very tough. Obviously, my whole family is in Arizona. They all were all pulling for ASU just because it's easy to come watch me play and I'd be close to home and I could still hang out with them more. But at the end of the day, they all want what's best for me. So they're all happy that I chose Nebraska. They're all excited for this next chapter. But it was a very tough decision for me to leave home.
Did you have to sell anyone specific on leaving home?
Mostly, I would say my mom. She really wanted me to stay home, but she actually took the visit with me in Nebraska, and her job is to make sure that the coaches are trustworthy, and she thought that all the Nebraska coaches were, so she's fine with me going to play with them. I know my little brother is probably really bummed out because he would love to just drive a little bit and watch me play, but he'll still be watching every game on TV, so it's not too bad.
Cade Warder with us, Hail Varsity Radio. So Mama is on board, which is key, and you said the key word there, trust. When you look at this staff you got to meet, anyone specific that felt most trustworthy? Not a competition per se, but I guess more of a connection question.
I would say Coach Riley. I felt like I could trust him. I felt like I could trust not only him, but his walk-on stories that he had. And Nebraska, obviously, is a great walk-on program. So it was kind of a culmination of not only Riley, but also just the entire walk-on, or the entire Nebraska staff and their walk-on program.
What story did you maybe know about, or did you learn about most, I guess, with the Nebraska walk-on tradition? Here in Nebraska, it's a badge of honor to be a walk-on and then get that scholarship. What story resonated with you?
I wouldn't say any individual story, per se. I would just say the culmination of all the different stories put together, that all these guys are just walking on and they continue to produce and have success for the team later on in their career. So that's really appealing for obviously a walk-on like me. And then also Coach Riley had walk-ons back at Oregon State, I think, that continue to produce for him as well. All that together really makes his walk-on program, premier walk-on program.
Can you kind of define what fit meant for you? That was a word that was very important to you. Got to be the right fit, and that makes a ton of sense. Tell me what fit means to you.
Fit for me, so I felt I fit in the program because I think they can use me in their offense well. I think I'll be able to be used in the slot a lot, be able to get those matchups against the underneath guys, and then move me outside if they ever want me to get those possession routes, beat those smaller corners. So I felt like I really fit not only in the offense, football-wise, but I felt I fit in relation to the coaches and the strength and conditioning coaches. As a whole, with the program, I felt like I fit very well. It just felt right to me with the gut feeling, and I prayed about it, and I felt like that was the best fit for me.
Who did you connect with from a strength and conditioning standpoint? Who stuck out to you?
I would probably say I think I'm not great with names, so I would say Mark, the head guy.
Yeah, Mark Phillip.
He's a very fun guy. He's in your face, which I like, but he's also having fun with the whole program at the same time. So I said that was really appealing to me. And then their weight room, obviously. I think Ndamukong Suh donated a lot of the weight room, racks, and platforms, stuff like that. So that was really awesome to see.
Cade, when did you kind of first gravitate towards football?
When I was really young, when I was really, really young, I started playing football because of my dad. I felt like I was obligated to because, obviously, his career. But then as I grew older, I grew less away from my dad and more just my love of the game. I started to love the game, love my teammates I've had, love the way football brings together people for one common cause. It was really awesome to me. That's why I really love football.
Well, you got to have that love for the game. And did your dad have a talk with you about kind of finding your own way with it, in a sense, do it for you, not for me? Did you guys have that discussion?
When I was very, very young, when I first started, as I said, I started playing for my dad, and he asked me if I really enjoyed it, and honestly, I told him, no, I'm playing it for you. And he goes, well, you don't have to. And I said, well, I want to. And then that moment right there is when I really figured out that I had to make sure this is what I want to do and not what he wants to do. So I started giving in with everything I had to football. That's when it really started to be enjoyable for me and really when it turned around.
Kay, tell us a bit about your family. Obviously, Nebraska fans and sports fans know about your dad. Your mom is, just from what I've seen in the media, is completely an awesome person as well. And then you have a very vast family that is so unique. And give folks a little background to your brothers and sisters.
Well, I'm one of seven, so it's never a dull moment in my house. But no, I'm the third oldest. Two have already left. One lives in St. Louis, and one lives actually five miles from my house. And then I have four younger ones who still live at home. My family, both my parents are from Iowa. I still have most of my extended family living in Iowa. Everyone but my uncle, whose dad went to Nebraska, was a little disappointed I didn't get to choose a school with gold and black with the Hawkeyes, but they're all still happy for me. They're all excited to watch me as I move on and play football at the next level. They all want the best for me.
Tell me about work ethic, because it sounds like you have a ton of that. Did Dad help develop that in you?
Yeah, my work ethic, I just try to push as hard as I can all the time. I'm sure most athletes at this level do. I really hope they do. But I just try my best to give all I have every time I do out and go somewhere, whether it's practice or lifting or the game. I'll give it my all. And that's what my dad has always taught me. He always teaches me to do it my best all the time. that's what I try to do in my work ethic, no matter when it is or what it is, whether football or not.
What was it like for you growing up, man, as Kurt Warner's boy?
You know, I get that question a lot, but to me, he's just my dad, honestly. I wouldn't rather have any other dad or coach. I'm glad that he got to coach me the last couple of years at my high school. But growing up with him, I mean, it was just normal to me personally because I didn't know anything else. But as I grew older, obviously, it was cool to get those little perks, you know, with Kurt Warner being your dad, whether it's, you know, going behind the scenes at practice or getting tickets to a game. It was obviously a perk to having him. But, no, he's just my dad, and I love him, and I wouldn't want anybody else coaching me.
Do you just ever step back when NFL Films is on and just kind of go, wow, you just made that throw, Dad?
Yeah, I would say it's more the other way around. I mean, we all know how great he is, so me and my brother always try to kick him up down off his pedestal a little bit. We'll pull up videos of his interceptions and stuff, and we'll make fun of him. Because he knows, we all know how good he is. Obviously, being a Hall of Famer now, that was such a great experience to be at. But no, my family, we always watch his games and we always cheer for him. I've watched his football life numerous times. Obviously, with him being my dad, I've heard his story numerous times. So it's a great story, especially for me, being close to the same situation at this point in my life as he was in his.
So you just have an interception reel on play, huh?
A little bit. The James Harris won the Super Bowl still pains me to watch, so I don't pull up that one. But no, we always joke with him about, you know, being the slowest player in Madden consecutive year after year. We always joke with him about his deep throw accuracy or how far he can throw the ball. But, I mean, he doesn't really have anything to say besides just look at the stats. I mean, look at my gold jacket, you know what I mean?
Cade Warner is with us, Hail Varsity Radio. What do you like most about playing wideout?
I've actually started wideout my freshman year. Before that, I probably played every position on the field. But no, I just really enjoy wideout because it's such an important position on the field. It's close to the quarterback since obviously my dad was the quarterback. I've always caught the ball for him when he's throwing to me. So I guess it just kind of came natural to me. As I grew into my body and got more and more athletic, I just moved to wide receiver. And ever since freshman year, I've loved it and I haven't looked back. And I continue to love wide receiver even more and more every time I practice it.
Cade Warner, Hail Varsity Radio. Cade, best to you. Look forward to talking again. Thanks for taking time today.
Thank you very much.
Now back with Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranach.
Back to it, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Gorgeous weather, and I've referenced that all week. I've also told you about Wilderness Ridge. Find your way out to Wilderness Ridge this spring. Find it out there. Technically, it's winter. Membership benefits, membership pricing, and, of course, two great folks, many folks, but Chris Thompson and, of course, Mike Shuhart, Director of Instruction, Shuey, our dear friend. And you can go visit Wilderness Ridge today, wildernessridgegolf.com, 402-434-5106. Great to catch up with Cade Warner for a few minutes. Loved his insight. And a lot of things about the interview stuck out to me, but specifically the career path, Mark. Let's go there for a minute. How Kurt Warner was not really recruited, ended up at Northern Iowa, did the Hy-Vee thing, did the arena thing, did the NFL Europe thing, and then because of injury got a shot with Coach Vermeil. I think it was Grant Wistrom's, might have been his second year there. And here comes the greatest show on turf. I mean, it all came together. You get Marshall Faulk, you got Orlando Pace, you got a good defense, but you got Torrey Holt, you got Isaac Bruce. And what an offense it was. And the guy that made things look easy because the game was slower to him. And I'll never forget the interview after the first handful of games Kurt Warner played as starting quarterback for the Rams. Like, well, yeah, I mean, not to poo-poo the NFL, but in an arena ball, I mean, it's so condensed, you just got to let it fly, and the windows are tighter, and yada, yada, yada.
Get rid of it quick.
Right. I mean, it's just the timing and the ability to anticipate and the arm strength and all that good stuff and just the window fitting, so to speak. So from day one, Kurt Warner has defied the odds, and his son, Cade, while under-recruited, made a choice. I'm gonna go away from family and comfort, and I'm gonna go go to Nebraska because, you know what, Mom and I trust Coach Riley, and there's a history at Nebraska of walk-ons. There's a history of walk-ons at Oregon State. A guy that's gone for a grand a year, it sounds like, down in New Orleans with Crooks. So it was a perfect situation, it sounds like, and we'll see how it works out.
Yeah, and you wonder, too, how much – look, when you grow up like that, you grow up in a football family, it's got to be a little bit different than growing up normal. I mean, one, you grow up privileged, you're loaded. And then but at the same time, you grow up in a household where hard work still matters, right? Like, it's not like
– Well, it was that hard work that got you the privilege, the perseverance.
Exactly, yeah. So it's not quite a silver spoon living, you know, because – You know, your dad was a major grinder.
Yes.
And you just look at what it's remarkable. I wonder if there are other teams. I just don't know enough to know. But are there other teams that have provided as much of a refuge for guys that have NFL dads? like what's happening here with Spielman, with Keyshawn, could have been Porsche. Mm-hmm. Now you got Cade Warner. Who else am I missing? There's a fourth.
Miles.
Duh. Yeah. Not an NFL dad, but still. You get the idea. Mm-hmm. Football royalty type. By the way, those are big names, right? That's not just like some obscure guy that got a cup of coffee in the NFL or was a random assistant somewhere. I mean, you're talking about household big-time decision-maker names. If they're not decision makers, then they're, you know, Hall of Famers or borderline Hall of Famers. I mean, Keyshawn, Kurt Warner, Chris Spielman. I mean, or Rick Spielman, sorry. And
no, but, you know, Uncle Rick.
Yeah, it's right. It's just like, I don't know, man. It's and you wonder what that'll do.
Well, here's
kind of effect that's going to have on the team. And if you start to. Like, do you start to become known as that? Like, oh yeah, if you're football royalty, you go there.
Here's what I think. Here's what I think it sends. The message it sends. A, it's the credibility shot. I mean, Riley's already got that from NFL people, and a lot of people in college football. They love him. They respect him greatly. And what you have now is. Football royalty willing to send their babies to him, their own flesh and blood they love. And that is the ultimate statement. Got to produce, but the common trait with all those folks you said, they are grinders. There's no, Keyshawn didn't, he wanted to be great, but his backstory's very telling about his determination. Les Miles was an assistant at Colorado and Michigan, okay, working for Shem Beckler and Coach Mack. Then he got his shot and did a lot with Oklahoma State and LSU. And then you have the example with Kurt Warner, ultimate grinder, self-belief. And again, we're talking culture. Let's go back to segment one for a second.
Yep, exactly.
I mean, that's what you're bringing into. And then Spielman, for God's sake. I mean, a blue collar dude, family, is, you know.
And he's the most gifted out of those four.
He is, but he never acted gifted. I mean, he came in and just ready to work. Mm-hmm. The more of those types of personalities. And athletes you can bring in, man, it's going to rub off on the locker room, and it's going to, I mean, it's like the walk-on effect. Go get me a grinder that's going to push everybody and also perform.
It's funny. All of those guys have a legitimate shot at playing this year. Spielman's the only one that's been on campus for any length of time. He redshirted, but there was plenty of talk about, well, he didn't have to. You know, if the wide receiver room wasn't so jammed, he certainly had the ability to play, so he's going to play right away. Keyshawn's got a chance. I mean, you only got five scholarship receivers on campus. Well, now you add McQuitty and Keyshawn to the mix.
You have more, but you need a couple of young pups to do their thing, right?
Absolutely. I mean, they have to play. There's just no doubt about it. They have to play. And so not only are you getting this recruiting hall of, again, royalty, football royalty, but dudes that will probably play. Because you know they're not – you're bringing in football IQ, too.
Mm-hmm.
These guys get it at a different level than most people.
Well, a name, we got about a minute left here in hour one. But look at the McCaffrey clan, okay? Easy Ed in Denver. Kind of a forgotten late-round dude out of Stanford. Two kids. Christian, obviously phenomenal at Stanford. The younger brother, the top quarterback that Harbaugh wanted, and he got. And you'll see McCaffrey likely in a couple of years, but just go get that NFL family, but get the right NFL family, as in the grinder that has had to work their way up. And it's brilliant. I mean,
we'll see what it translates to, but it appears
on its face, right?
Yeah. It appears so far you're bringing in character. You're bringing in talent, obviously. And just guys that mentally are more advanced. And then physically, skills-wise, probably more advanced. Because they've been in tune with the fine points of the game more so than most kids their age. So, yeah, we'll see, right?
Hour two coming up. Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and magazine. Vogues will be with us. That'll get things kicked off in hour two. The Iron Horse, Gary Sharp, will be with us. We'll get Sharpie's take on Husker baseball, get his thoughts on the roster. Spring football is getting closer and closer. Man, March 4th, it gets rolling. Husker basketball trying to, exercise that demon from back in PBA, Payback Bucky in Columbus today. TJ Henning's producing, Mark Kranak. Chris Schmidt can find us on Twitter at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt_radio, at Mark Skurs. Hour two next. Brandon Vogel, when we come back on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Back with you, hour two, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Be sure to log on. HailVarsity.com. Get all the updates on Husker baseball later today, Nebraska basketball. Welcome in Brandon Vogel, HailVarsity.com and magazine. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, TJ Henning, Gary Sharp. About 25 minutes away. Bogues, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Doing outstanding, man. Great to catch up with you again. Thanks for the time. Okay, I got to ask this. It is All-Star Weekend. We're going to dive off into the NBA for 30 seconds. Do you remember where you were with MJ's free throw line dunk 30 years ago this All-Star Weekend?
I don't. I remember watching, wearing out about two VCR tapes worth of Come Fly With Me. So I saw that dunk about probably close to 500 times over my career as a diehard NBA fan. But let's see. I don't remember where I was exactly. The time it happened live. I probably wasn't watching.
No, it's all right. I mean, we had it on VCR, man. We'd watch that dunk contest between him and Dominique in 87 in Chicago. I'm just going off on a tangent here. I throw it out there because you're such a Bulls fan growing up. So I had to ask you.
Yes, I was. But yeah, like I said, you ended up watching those classic dunk contests. That was kind of the height of it there.
Yes.
I think even the 88 one may have been. Was that the Jordan and Dominique one?
You're right. 80, you're right. Yep, you're right. You're right. I was a year off, but the point is I was a mess there. So, Vogues, let's talk a little bit here about Nebraska football and start off with Billy Devaney, his comments, his thoughts, and kind of your reaction to Devaney's assessment?
Not all that surprised, really. I mean, I think most people agree that Nebraska does have enough talent to win the West. In fact, they probably have a talent advantage over most of the West. So, you know, that part of it made sense. It makes it a little bit bold to say that, you know, when you're sort of part of and in the day-to-day operation of the team, because, well, if you have more talent, then why are you 1-3 against those teams the past 2 years or whatever, 1-5, I guess, the past 3 years. So that part of it made sense. Ohio State part all made sense. Tennessee, I thought there was a little bit more of a talent gap there than maybe was let on, but not at every position, not the way it was at Ohio State.
Brandon, you know, the way that Sean Eichhorst and then now Billy Devaney, it's one thing for fans to talk about Iowa.
Yeah.
Did the administration just flat out throwing shade, being disrespectful? What's your take on that?
It definitely jumped out to me, and I definitely connected it back to, you know, the day Bo Pelini was let go and the comments about Sean Eichhorst made about Iowa then. That's all fine and good. I don't think most of the Nebraska fans sort of disagree with that at heart, but you got to start beating those guys. I mean, because it already kind of looks like, well, that's great, but, you know, the greatest comeback ever is just scoreboard, and Iowa has that right now. So I would tread a little lightly in terms of any more Hawkeye shade.
Well, let's stay shady for a second. let's try and answer this question. The record, the last 3 years against Iowa and Wisconsin, who you got to beat to win the West, when on paper your recruiting classes are better. And on paper, Iowa's sending, and Wisconsin, sending more guys to the combine since you joined the Big Ten. Do we know the magical why it's happened? Obviously, Nebraska didn't make enough plays, but let's dive a little deeper into it. Is it just because Iowa and Wisconsin for years have understood who they are, what they are, and they just stick to their blueprint? And is it as simple as that? Meanwhile, in Nebraska, you've had transition and lack of identity, or square peg, round hole fit.
Yeah, I do think it comes down to identity for the most part. Iowa certainly had it in terms of coaching continuity. What makes Wisconsin so impressive is that they've done it with coaching change, a lot of it. And that's really one of the hardest things to do, is to really get that program identity that goes beyond simple the coach's identity. I mean, you know, Nebraska tried to do it when Coach Osborne retired. Worked out to varying degrees. You know, nobody wants to rehash that whole thing again, but until somebody decided it wasn't working out. So it's never a given that stuff's going to translate to each new staff. Wisconsin's been able to do it somehow. I think Barry Alvarez has a lot to do with it, but he's not pulling every string from the AD's office. At least I don't think so.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know, man. I mean, Barry's the godfather.
I can't think of any other programs where you would have your AD come down and be like, oh, we lost our coach. You want to coach the Rose Bowl? Be like, yeah, sure, that's fine. So maybe he is. But, yeah, when you look at those two schools in particular, they have a better idea of, I think, who they are and what they're doing than Nebraska does. And they probably should. You know, Nebraska made a switch in the middle of that. So that's what you got to get to, I think, if you want to consistently beat those teams, because they're just so good at what they do.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. It's interesting. You pulled together on your hot reads. You took the average recruiting ranking of the different teams in the Big Ten since Nebraska joined, and you compared that to how many combine invites they've received since 2011. Of course, this week, the announcement that Seathan Carter and Nathan Gary are the only two combine invitees for Nebraska. when you look at it, when you look at the list, here's Nebraska's totals. They've recruited to rank fourth in the Big Ten since 2011, right behind Ohio State, behind Michigan State, behind Michigan. And Nebraska's only generated 19 combine invites out of that, which puts them at probably one of the worst performers in that category, right? Like recruiting rankings compared to invites, it tells the story of Nebraska not developing guys or not keeping guys in the class. I mean, you name it. Then you compare that to like Iowa, recruiting at its like seventh in the Big Ten, 30 combine invites. I mean, 11 more guys since 2011 than Nebraska. Michigan State's had 33, Ohio State's had 45. Like, did you think it would be like that when you started that research? It sort of just confirms, I think, what we've all seen over the past few years, where it's Nebraska's underperforming.
Yeah, I didn't expect the gap to be that big. So with those combine invites that you're mentioning, you've got a top six in the Big Ten. And I think number six is Wisconsin, and they either have 28 or 29.
28.
And then Nebraska, yeah, 28. So that's nine more over six seasons than Nebraska has. But you know, that's a pretty big jump because so Wisconsin's 28, and then there's the next school, Penn State, Michigan, somebody, 29. You know, there's that group right there that's 30, 31, 28, 29. And that kind of covers all of your teams. Michigan State's really high. It wasn't a surprise. It kind of made a little bit of sense. Like, oh, so this is how Michigan State had done some things in the past. You know, they're recruiting at a higher level now, and they still rank pretty well in recruiting over that span. But that doing it via the combine invites, I think, more closely explained what has happened in the Big Ten as a whole over the entire time that Nebraska's been there, better than the recruiting rankings did. And, you know, there might be a little bit of a chicken egg sort of debate to be had there. You know, are players on teams, good players on teams who are winning, you know, they obviously get seen. Are they just better known? But the NFL is so cutthroat that I have to think that would be a minor factor, if anything at all.
But it's funny what it confer. It's the things we all know, but it's proven out.
Yeah.
It's like the raw material coming into Nebraska isn't translating on the other end. The raw material coming into Iowa is, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're doing a better job of taking their raw resources and turning them into something, which is kind of what we've all thought, but it's striking how accurate that is. Like, Iowa has had 30 combine invites, recruiting seventh place in the Big Ten. Nebraska's had 19. I mean, that is a jump.
The other interesting part about that is, you know, so when you look at those, I guess, ratios between combine invites and recruiting ranking it within the Big Ten, Iowa and Nebraska are really sort of the inverse. You know, Nebraska's up here and then comes down to here. Iowa's down here, goes up to there. Their winning percentage, I don't know what it is exactly, but it's probably within one or two games of each other in terms of overall wins. So, you know, there's that part of it, too. So if Iowa's doing that, you know, they're developing players at a, I guess, greater level over this past six seasons than Nebraska has, at least in terms of putting guys close to the NFL. Why aren't they winning a little bit more? So, you know, these things are always, there's so many variables. It's tough to get your arms around all of them, but it's an interesting way to look at it.
Vogues, what is, when we look at talent and the development and the fundamentals going from point A to point B as a athlete, and obviously the bigger, stronger, faster side of things you can control as a player and as a program and an accountability culture. But from a coaching and teaching and technique standpoint, I mean, where do you think Nebraska can grow? You have a new coordinator, you got a new defense, you have some new pieces that fit this blueprint and philosophy on offense. I mean, can this offense, let's just pick the offensive line, right? You have a slew of guys that look great on film in high school and guys that when they're healthy and I'm talking the left side of the current offensive line, have performed well. I mean, what are some of those ingredients, I guess, with development in your mind?
Well, I think it really probably comes down to the quality of teaching overall, and that's goes to the head coach, but it also goes to sort of the individual instruction those guys are getting at their individual positions. You know, a lot of those 30 guys for Iowa are offensive linemen, and we sort of know about, you know, the history of Iowa at that position and the continuity they've had there. So I think that's kind of where it starts. I think the signs on that front are encouraging overall for Nebraska. I think that's part of what the fact that you have so many sons of famous football fathers showing up in Nebraska says a little bit. It's possible I totally imagine this, but I think when, you know, not long after Riley took the Nebraska job, ESPN, I think that following spring or something, put out a poll of FBS coaches. And one of the questions was, who would you want your son to play for? And I think Mike Riley came in either first or second on that. So, you know, we're seeing that sort of thing happen. And I don't think that happens for no reason. And I think it comes down to, for the football connoisseurs, the guys who do this professionally at a high, high level, they can see the sort of the quality of what these kids are being taught. And that extends beyond football too, but in terms of how it applies to the field and winning games, I think that part of it is where Nebraska could be a little bit better than it was maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Brandon Vogel with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Spring ball in 2 weeks, which is crazy to say, but it starts in 2 weeks. Take Tanner Lee aside, because I think he'll be the obvious choice. Which player on Nebraska's roster generates a buzz, gets oft talked about, that hasn't played a snap at Nebraska yet?
Probably the best bet is probably J.D. Spielman. I think he's going to get a chance to sort of, based on the things we heard, based on the fact that he didn't have to redshirt, it was kind of a close call there for him. He's going to have a chance to, I think, really make an impact at that slot position where Nebraska needs to find a replacement. And he kind of needs to, you know. Everyone knows what Tyjon Lindsey is capable of. He's going to come in and battle for presumably the same spot. So I think he'll have a pretty big spring. And I think Javon McQuitty, another wide receiver, is really going to impress some people. He's going to have that sort of fall camp that you kind of more closely associate with freshmen kind of making their move. The guy you kind of hear just at least one or two things about every day. I think he has the potential to be that guy.
Flip it around defensively, a couple of names you're anxious about.
I'm excited to see, you know, not to just go exclusively with new guys, but I'm really excited to see Avery Roberts. I'm excited to see Quayshawn Alexander, to see sort of how he fits in this scheme, because he seems like a really good fit for this scheme. And then, you know, you're excited to see Lamar Jackson after a semester of football, essentially. And piecing together that whole secondary, there's so many options back there for Nebraska. That's going to kind of be, I think, your daily source of a lot of updates is kind of figuring out how that all fits.
Brandon, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, how are you going to approach that one? Because it's like, this has to be it's going to be so hard not to make sweeping generalizations this spring, put it that way. Right? Like, it's going to be pretty difficult because the dynamics are going to change so much and the pieces are going to move so much.
They really are, and there's so much to replace, especially when you factor in the new defensive scheme. You basically start over there. That it's going to feel like these things are changing daily, and you know, I guess they probably are to a certain degree, but it's also just a reflection of, well, you know, we get to see whatever amount of those practices we get to see. There's a whole bunch of other stuff going on. You know, that's maybe 16% of those players' football day. So it's going to be, I'm not quite sure I remember a spring that felt quite as unknown, but also as big as this one for Nebraska.
Brandon Vogel with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Vogues, let's spend a second on Nebraska basketball. How are you feeling about today?
Well, I think they'll have a shot. You know, they traditionally haven't played great in Columbus, but it feels like a pretty two programs that are right about the same spot right now. So you have to like the way Jordan Shimonga played earlier this week. If they can get a big effort out of him again, they've got a shot. You know, road wins are always tough in the Big Ten, but it should be a pretty fun game, I think. Ohio State presents some challenges, but Nebraska has a way of hanging around, so definitely don't skip it. I think it'll be a good one.
They do hang around. Vogues, you have a great weekend. Awesome to catch up real quick. Tell folks a little bit about HailVarsity.com, what folks can find on the site, and also if they haven't seen the recruiting issue, what's in store there?
Yeah, so we got a bunch of player profiles from the 2017 class. Javon McQuitty, one I just mentioned. Jalen Bradley, in-state kid. Keyshawn and Tristan Jebbia, you know, so covered a lot of ground with that one. We've got a spring preview actually coming up, talking about some of the things we just mentioned in our upcoming issue, which will be on newsstands next week. And then online, you know, we're continuing to cover recruiting. That's kind of an ongoing thing, keeping up with the offers going out, reaching out to some of those kids, doing some player interviews, which you can usually find on Hail Varsity Premium. Got the premium message board where we can discuss all of these various spring football changes. So it's a great time to try it. If you haven't, you can get it for 30 days for free to try it out.
HailVarsity.com/subscribe. Do so. Vogues, have a great weekend, man. Thanks for a few minutes, bud.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Appreciate it.
Yes, Brent.
Krenak, I swear that I thought it was the 87 dunk contest.
It's tough to remember. Don't worry, man.
No, that was a long time ago. No, it's okay. But
we're going back three decades. But it's hard.
But no, but as a kid, I get excited for the dunk contest. And it's,
yeah, I used to get down on Spud Webb.
Well, see, and our dear friend Eric Strickland, I mean, he golfs with Spud down in Dallas all the time.
Yeah, Spud gave me hope.
And
he did.
And then the playground quickly took that hope away.
It's like, man, I can get net. I wonder if one of these days I'll be able to get rim.
Yeah. I
never did.
Never, ever had that hope. You want to hope to save some money and impress her because maybe you fumbled during Valentine's Day. It's easy to do with Rick and Sauter Heyman. 1-carat diamonds. I talk about these 1-carat diamonds quite a bit because they're fabulous. They're beautiful. They're affordable. And it's a possibility now for you. $100 a month. Think about that with Sauter Heyman and your friends at Sauter Heyman. Go see Rick this weekend and ask him about the 1-carat diamonds available for $100 a month. Limited time offer with approved credit. And you can see stores for details, SauterHeyman.com. 12th and O, downtown Lincoln, South Point Pavilion in Lincoln. Or if you're traveling west, Sauter Heyman location for you in Grand Island. Let's get caught up with the Iron Horse. Gary Sharp on the way. Hail Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Now it's time to get back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show with Chris Schmidt and Mark Krenak.
All right, that's it!
You two guys leave me no choice. No television for a week. What?!
Great to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Krenak, TJ Henning. And it's the Iron Horse, Gary Sharp, with us on a Saturday. Sharpie, good morning. How you doing?
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
I'm good. Do you have the golf clubs out?
Oh, it's unbelievable. At some point, we're going to pay for it, but the weather has been fantastic. I mean, we might as well. I mean, we should be playing baseball in Nebraska, not out in California.
No, it is something that, yeah, you look at California, Arizona, and the weather's tremendous here in the great state of Nebraska, the good life. Sharpie, I want to start with baseball and go there first for Nebraska in this 2017 season. And what was kind of your gut feel going into this year with Nebraska? I mean, what are your expectations? And, you know, what's kind of your bar for them as you see that they're pegged third to finish in the Big Ten? Is that a good number for them? I think Nebraska fans want that. But what are you thinking when you look at this roster and this this rotation?
Well, the realistic expectations every year are to make the NCAA tournament. And the Big Ten has improved enough where it's not just a one-bid league or a two-bid league. You're going to get maybe three, maybe even four bids out of there this year. But Nebraska every year should be in the NCAA tournament. I have my expectations, and then I kind of watched as the preseason unfolded with Darren Erstad. And, you know, he's sometimes very cautious to go there. But I could tell that in his comments, he really likes this team, the makeup of the team, and that they understand that it's going to be a long process. You know, your season's not decided after the first couple of games. You got to play a full 56. I like their pitching depth. I think that will carry them a ways until they find a right mix for their lineup in the bottom when you're going 6 through 9. Mm-hmm. But I like this team. I think this is a team that definitely should be in the NCAA tournament. And you would hope for even a step more. You get to the NCAA tournament and you go in as at least a number 2 seed. But this is an important year for Nebraska baseball because they have a mix of some older guys and some younger guys. But this will be, I think, one of the more talented teams from the mound to the field to the plate with Darren Tadnawell. And let's be honest, last year was a terrible taste in the mouth at the end of the year. You go 2 in the queue in Omaha in the Big Ten tournament, and you go 2 in queue in the NCAA tournament, and people are starting to write you off. I mean, Maryland is getting all the love in the Big Ten, and it's crazy, guys, that this far into the Big Ten in baseball, Nebraska has yet to win a postseason championship. When we thought it would just be linear, that they would go from the Big 12 where they were competitive to the Big Ten where they would stand at the top. Well, that hasn't been the case, and Nebraska needs to find a way to change that so that Nebraska is being mentioned every preseason and every year as the king of the Big Ten.
Do you think Nebraska is directly responsible just by showing up to the Big Ten? Do you think they're directly responsible for sort of the increase in competitiveness across the Big Ten because the rest of the conference saw what the Big Red, you know, did resource-wise, has done history-wise in crappy weather, just like them? It's like the entire conference has gotten better ever since Nebraska showed up.
Well, I think Indiana was already going to be really good when Nebraska entered the league. They had Tracy Smith had recruited well. That was a really good roster. I think I agree with you, Mark, that Nebraska coming in, when you look at Nebraska's facilities and their budget for baseball and what they pay their head coach, other schools have to go, okay, if we're going to be in this, we're in it to win it. So you had Indiana was just moving forward. They were picking up momentum as a national team and got to the College World Series. And then you had Nebraska on the other end. And then also, let's don't kid ourselves, Maryland has really helped out as well. The Eastern Seaboard has some really good baseball. And Maryland has, you know, Maryland almost made the College World Series last year. So I think it's from east to west and in the middle with Indiana, this whole league has improved. But the one thing you see is the administrators are not shy to fire coaches and they're not shy to build facilities and spend money. And so that's a great sign moving forward for the Big Ten. And, you know, you get another bump this year with Minnesota. Minnesota is going to be able to play games early on at home because they're going to play in the Viking Stadium. So it's good right now for Big Ten baseball to get more exposure. They're on TV more. It's just now when you get to the postseason, can you get that team to the second weekend? And then, of course, can you get a team to the College World Series?
What could be the Nebraska Achilles heel this year? I mean, if they don't live up to getting the postseason, why will that be, do you think?
Because they're playing way too many 3-2, 4-3 type games.
Okay.
That they're not able to put up some crooked numbers so that they don't always have to rely on their pitching, that they can have, Friday night where Jake Myers isn't on his game. But that's okay. Nebraska scores 6-7 runs, and they win the game 7-3. I think if that's the downfall, it's way too many 3-2, 4-3 type games where Nebraska can't get the offense going, and it just stagnates, and they have to rely so much on their starting pitching or their bullpen that they just, at some point during the year, they hit the wall.
Well, hey, look, you brought up the bottom of the lineup, and, I mean, come on, it's been not even a weekend yet. This is baseball. Don't want to make too many conclusions here, but Brady Childs, he gets to start the game, too. He's 3-for-4. You know, Mojo Hagee, freshman, batting 9th. He goes 2-for-3. You got some production out of those guys at the bottom of the lineup, young guys. And Childs had the put out, too, behind the plate. Or throwing a guy out to help preserve the win. Do you think there's maybe a chance that, and those guys I don't think are projected to be like full-time starters, but do you think Erstad's open to that, right? Do you think there's a chance that some of these guys just sort of emerge and, hey, you sort of have to find a place for them in the lineup?
Well, you hope that's the case. I think he's shown that he's not afraid to play role-player guys, and if they earn their spot, they're going to get more at-bats or more time in the field. And those are two prime examples. I think, you know, Nebraska has some stars in their lineup, but they also have some guys that we've kind of, when people open their eyes to Nebraska baseball, it was the kind of the blue collar under the radar type players that were out there. And, you know, I think Darren Erstad would love to have that as part of his program. But you're right, it's two games into the year. The amazing stat about Nebraska baseball when I was looking at this weekend, do you know that Darren Erstad, since he's been the head coach, has never come out of the first weekend with an above 500 record? I mean, that's I know they usually go to warm weather sites. They usually play a really good team, but that just blew me away. But nice to see him bounce back last night to split on the opening night of the season.
Joey Sharp with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Sharpie, what are your thoughts on the collection of of family names that the Nebraska's getting to come play football, walk on, or scholarship, the latest being Cade Warner to walk on. Of course, Kurt Warner, his papa. What's your reaction to that, and what do you think it says?
Well, I said this yesterday here in Omaha. A great idea would be to get Kurt Warner, Keyshawn Johnson Sr., Les Miles, and Rick Spielman all together, maybe for the spring game. Load them up in Nebraska gear, take a picture of those four proud papas, and put that out everywhere you can imagine in terms of social media, because I think that says a lot about what those guys who are in the game of football, they understand football from both sides, whether it be as a parent or as a player, or in Rick Spielman's case, a guy that's looking to form a roster. Those guys get football. They understand football. They know the intricacies of it. They know what relationships are like. And for those four to say yes to send their sons to Nebraska, I think says a lot. And also, you look at all four, and they all have one really common trait. Their dads have always been winners wherever they've been, so they pass that down to their sons. And I think you see that when Nebraska's out recruiting, they look for kids that are part of either a winning program or a winning lineage. But it's unique, and I think Nebraska needs to promote that they have four players whose fathers are either in the Football Hall of Fame or are well-known or are running an NFL franchise. So I think it's pretty cool. Cade, they're all going to be under the microscope because they're going to say, oh, there's Cade Warner, boy. He's got to put up all these big numbers. But what a cool thing for Nebraska. I mean, it's kind of unique. And a kid like Cade Warner is very intriguing. You wonder why he didn't get any FBS offers. Was he overlooked? Okay, this is an opportunity to see if he can, in the next couple of years, find his way onto the field at Nebraska at that position.
He might find his way on the field this year or next year. Yeah, I'm just looking at the receiver.
Stop.
Now.
Stop.
What? You don't think so? You don't think he has a chance?
No. Let's just be very cautious here. The thing about the wide receivers at Nebraska, this will be a very interesting offseason to see the development of young players. Don't forget, you have a couple of older guys that have been around for a while that aren't going to give up very many catches. Let's watch Cade Warner. If he's on the field in the next couple of years, I think that's a win-win. I think another part of Cade Warner saying yes to Nebraska is tip of the hat to Kenny Wilhite and everybody else involved in putting together Nebraska's walk-on class. If you look at it, it is very intriguing from Jordan Pop to Cade Warner to Ethan Cox from Blair to Dylan Reynolds from Broken Bow to Hunter Miller. They did a really good job in putting together a walk-on class. If Cade Warner gets on the field, Mark, I'll go back in the fall. But it's going to be a challenge. But I want to see why nobody else in that area of the country didn't step up and say, hey, let's give him an offer. So, maybe walk
you
over the
film.
Chip on his
you
shoulder.
You watch film.
And,
I watch film. You saw his huddle.
Yeah.
There was nothing on there outside of maybe straight breakaway speed. That was maybe the one knock. The rest of it, hands, moves, physical. I he's got size. I really didn't understand. He's state record holder in terms of catches. I mean, it reminds you a lot of Westerkamp, not just because he's white, but level of production that Westerkamp had out of Illinois.
I saw his film. I wondered the same thing. Why he didn't have any offers? I mean, we don't know. That's a question to be asked. But now you're past that. He's got he's a recruited walk on. Now he's got to go out on the football field and prove it, and we'll see what Keith Williams can do with him. If you use Jordan Westerkamp as an example, you could say, hey, Westerkamp, when he came into Nebraska, these are certain areas that he got better. Maybe we see him as a role. But he's got he's going to be in a room where you've got some pretty good wide receivers right now, and then next year where they're going to recruit another host of wide receivers. But it's a win-win for Nebraska to get him to say yes and come here as a walk-on.
Sharpie, you want to talk about Billy Devaney for a second and the talent discussion and Vogues did a nice write-up in Hot Reads on it on HaleVarsity.com, and it kind of goes back to the talent you get on paper coming into a program, and then not everybody's combine material. They cap it at 350, but Gary and CC are the two that got the invite. Does that number surprise you, or is that about right?
It's about right. The only other one that I would have thought would probably have been Josh Banderas.
Okay.
And get ready, because next year is going to be a small number as well, because there's just not very many seniors. There's only 13 scholarship seniors for Nebraska. You might get a Nick Gates that goes early and gets an invite to the combine, but it's going to be small again next year. I think everything that Billy Devaney said this week is absolutely true, and we've talked about it on the show. You guys have talked about it amongst your friends on Twitter, is that there was only one game last year where Nebraska walked onto the field, and I don't count the bowl game. That's personally me. I leave the bowl game alone. There's only one game Nebraska walked on the field where there was more talent on the other sideline, and that was Ohio State. And you read the reaction that Billy Devaney had when he saw Ohio State warming up. He thought, uh-oh. But other than that, Nebraska had the talent. Guys, in 2017, it moves now to development and game day coaching for Nebraska to have success, because their talent is better over the last 2 years. Is it talent enough to compete with the big boys on the other side? No, not yet. They don't have the depth of talent. And they have certain position groups where they lag way behind. But if we're talking just getting out of the West, there are no more excuses for Nebraska when it comes to talent. It shifts in 2017 to development and game day coaching, and that'll signify Nebraska's success.
I'm going to throw a third one out there. What about player culture?
That's a good one, because now that's a great point, because you've had kind of a transition of a lot of seniors that went through the roller coaster of Nebraska football over the last 2-3 years that have now departed from the program, and it's a bunch of new guys that can still be molded in how they look at things. And that's something, you know, you always ask that, hey, how's winter conditioning going? Hey, who are the leaders? We're gonna find that out when Nebraska faces adversity. But I think there's some guys that, like the Nick Gates and the Gerald Fosters, that did not like some of the BS that went on last year and have said, we're not going to let this permeate through our program and let that dictate how our legacy is kind of decided at Nebraska. So it was nice to see that those two guys stepped up right away. And I think they're bringing some younger guys with them. Don't kid yourself. There are some very, very confident football players in Nebraska's program, and they're not necessarily older guys. You got some freshmen that are on campus now that they walk a big game, and they want to be able to go out and talk it as well when they get on the field. So it's a kind of a mesh, but I think it's a good movement away from last year where you've said goodbye to 30 seniors who probably had opinions formed on how this program was going to work. Now you got guys that are still kind of developing, and you can mold a little bit more on how you want the culture to be.
Gary Sharp with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Sharpie, thanks so much for your time this morning, man. Have yourself a great weekend, and we'll do this again next time. Appreciate it, man.
As always, Mark Schaffitti, thank you.
Take care, bud.
Thanks, Gary.
All right,
hey,
Gary Sharp.
He brought up winter conditioning. This has been the quietest of all the winter conditionings I can remember. Usually you hear something, and it's always the same. It's, you know, they're working harder than ever. But you haven't heard anything. Have you? I haven't heard anything.
I haven't.
Novel.
I've been honestly just thinking how your winter conditioning's been going.
It's going good, man. Thanks. I'm down 2 pounds over the last 5 months. So, it's just coming right off.
I'm up three, so.
Oh, good. That's all muscle, most likely.
Yeah, yeah, right. Table.
Weighs more than fat.
Uh-huh. Yeah. All right, yeah. Quick timeout. We'll wind down a Saturday. Hale Varsity continues, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome back to the show. Here are Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
0.2. Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
Just let it roll for a minute. I haven't listened to Zeppelin in a while. Okay. Back with you, Hale Varsity Radio, Hale Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Kranak on the drums there, imitating Bonzo. So, is Ohio State-Nebraska basketball appointment TV for you today?
What's that? Sorry, I missed you, Ben. What?
You were just banging away on the drums, I know.
Yeah. Yeah, it was jamming. Okay,
Nebraska, Ohio State, appointment TV.
At least
to start,
yeah, probably tune in at about 2:40. Tip off's at 1, right?
No, brother, it's 5. Baseball's at 1, basketball's at 5.
Sorry, I got him confused. Okay, so that extra K and T got me confused in the So, I think if tune in about 6:40. And then because, you know, nothing matters until the last 5 minutes.
Well, right?
Especially in Nebraska.
Specifically against, you know, teams this year. I mean, Ohio State's a squad that I don't know how they did it. They just haven't done a lot to impress me, but they did enough to impress themselves with a 12-point deficit erasing and that last second win. I think I feel good about Nebraska today. I just feel weird about, I just had these different crystal ball moments where I'm kind of on with their performance. What I think's going to happen tends to happen. Don't feel good about it. They're going to lose.
I didn't know you were like the Swami over here.
Well, come on now. I can't take full credit for this inconsistency. Okay. I think they'll be okay, and I think guys will step up because
how's Roby going to be though?
Well,
has he been ruled out?
That's where I'm going. I think with Roby, just don't expect much from him at all today because of that ankle. I think guys will step up for him. I think. And you'll need to see it, but you'll need to have a good game from Horn. That's your Horn and Jack got to be your guys. Obviously, Ty and Glenn got to do their thing, but you need a repeat performance from Horn. He's been your catalyst, and you got to get your numbers near 80 offensively. Those are your two common denominators in wins. Horn's been good. They've been scoring better, that 80-point number.
How about Watson being a distributor, too?
Creator? I'd like that.
Well, Jacob Padilla brought it up, and his assist numbers are pretty low overall. But in this last game against Penn State, 5 assists, 0 turnovers. His assist-to-turnover ratio is pretty good. When he turns in numbers like that, Nebraska wins, period. But they haven't had... He hasn't played that role because he's been kind of that quasi scorer too. And Jacob Padilla on HailVarsity.com making the case that probably needs less of that. Nebraska needs less of that and more of him being a distributor.
That
so something
good.
To watch.
Well, and he's been more efficient when he's also been a distributor. I mean, you have more makes and less takes, so to speak. Your efficiency's super key. Okay, so I think Nebraska, I'm going against the old forecast yesterday. I think Nebraska squeaks out a win. That's how I'm feeling today.
Yeah. Nebraska's talented enough, by the way, to do I haven't ruled out March for these guys.
What?
listen. Hey, we talked about this a few years
NIT
ago, too.
NIT March?
Made a run. Look.
You're going Jimmy V on me, aren't you?
I'm not saying NCAA.
TJ, write this down. Okay, you can't tell me no. I'm ruling out. I'm. You can't say, well, I'm not talking NCAA, but I'm not ruling out March. Well, pick
a
side,
baby. Technically, the Big Ten tournament goes into the month of March, right? So
they're not banned from it.
Listen, what I'm saying is they have enough talent to be interesting.
Thank you.
Down the stretch here. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, that's perfect.
Nebraska's legitimately more talented than they've been in years. And this is one of the few times where I can honestly look ahead to next year and say genuinely excited about what's going to get on the floor next year for Nebraska.
Kranak, you just did a t-shirt.
They could be legit.
You just did a t-shirt.
What do you mean?
Nebraska ball, enough talent to be interesting.
Well... are, though, right?
Copyright it. Or call our friends at Triple B.
Would it be a shock? Would it be a shock if Nebraska goes to D.C.?
It makes noise?
A couple
no.
of wins.
No, it would.
Is all of a sudden in the semifinals?
No, it wouldn't.
No, that's what I'm saying. It would not be a shock. Would it have been a shock last year? Yep. And the year before, yep. And it was shocking last year. But I don't know. Who in the Big Ten is just heads and tails above Nebraska talent-wise that they can't compete with?
Well, my answer is they've already beat.
Mm-hmm.
We're lost by one.
See? That's what I'm saying. They're enough to be interesting.
All right. 15 seconds. What do you got going today?
Home Depot, Chris.
Bed Bath & Beyond.
You know, baseball on the radio, basketball on TV, whatever. What about you?
I had basketball with Junior. All right.
Hey,
next time, we'll talk to you on Monday. Thanks a lot with Hail Varsity.